Hi, I'm Govind Jayaraman, and this is Paper Napkin Wisdom. Today we have Patrick D'Intempo. Patrick is the man of many hats. He is a national karate champion, soap opera actor, and chiropractor. He's also developed a fantastic product that is used literally around the world in chiropractic. Interesting, fascinating entrepreneur who looks at philosophy as the most practical tool of achievement. Well, that's fascinating. So is he. This is part one of two conversations with Patrick D'Intempo. Let's listen in. Patrick, welcome to Paper Napkin Wisdom. I'm thrilled you could join me here today.
Govind, it's really my pleasure to be here. I've listened to several of these interviews, and I have to say this is really a sensational project and idea, and has literal meaning to me because I actually have had some of my best business ideas were written down on either little scraps of paper or even napkins sometimes. So I think it's just a brilliant insight on your part.
Oh, thank you. Well, I think it's really authentic because as entrepreneurs, we like these scraps of papers and these, you know, these annoying things to everybody else in our lives that are on shards of paper all around our desks in our lives. So I'm really glad that it speaks to you.
Thank you.
And what spoke to me is yours is really interesting and very different. Could I ask you to read it and describe it to everyone listening?
Sure. What I wrote is philosophy is the most practical tool for achievement. And here's why I say that. When people think of the word philosophy, it usually conjures up images of like old guys in robes, you know, walking around in antiquity, you know, talking about the greatest questions of life, you know, why does life exist? You know, what is the nature of human consciousness? Maybe the biggest philosophical question of all time. Why is there something rather than nothing? And, you know, you ponder these things. And I believe that most people walk around sometimes when they think of philosophy, it might conjure up an image of, you know, friends getting together on a Sunday afternoon over a cup of cappuccino with, you know, they're wearing the jacket with the suede patches on the sleeves. And whatever it is they're talking about on Sunday has no practical application into their life on Monday. But the reality is, every human being, whether they know it or not, has a philosophy. And this philosophy is driving their choices and actions, the consequence of it, which is dictating all of their outcomes. I recently was reading an article where a guy described it this way, which I thought completely accurate. He said, philosophy is the CEO of the business. It is really the prime mover that's driving the actions, the outcomes, et cetera. So every single one of us on the personal level has a philosophy about life, whether we know it or not. And all of us in business and every single entrepreneur has a philosophy. Now, why is it practical? It's practical because when you have contradictions in your basic philosophical premises, the only possible result is destruction. And the amount of destruction will be relative to the level of those contradictions. So for people who bother to identify their philosophy, from which comes their values, and then with those values goes into the world to try to do something effective or create or add value in the world, the more that they can refine this, remove contradiction from it, get clear on it, the better their outcomes and achievement becomes. And it's not even just in business, but philosophy has complete application to your love relationship. You can imagine your parenting, if you had a clear parenting philosophy, how important that might be. For your health and fitness, your very life depends on your philosophy and the choices you make. So for all the important categories of your life, philosophy has phenomenal impact. But unfortunately, the word philosophy has this sort of, like I said, this sort of abstract, ethereal, academic perception in the general population. And as a result, people don't really pursue it. Don't hear you.
Me, Patrick. I think that what's really amazing about what you're talking about, it appeals for me for two reasons. One, if I had it over to do again, I would have gone and done some mind expanding philosophical studies in university and college mm-hmm. because, you know, I, yes, the business tools are great, but I could have learned those anywhere. there are only certain places where we learn to explore philosophy and philosophical thinking. So, you know, that's one reason why this appeals to me. But I like this notion, as you've described it, that at the core of all of this, this philosophy, that our personal philosophy drives our values, drives our action in a variety of different areas. It's almost the root of it all.
Can I comment on that for a second?
Yeah.
This is an important thing that you just said as far as it being at the root of it all. What happens, I'm a serial entrepreneur myself. I've started several businesses. I started as a chiropractor, but I developed diagnostic technology and I ended up getting patents on that technology and then found myself in business and ended up, with our technology on six continents and 9,000 doctor's offices. And from there developed other programs because I learned it wasn't, for people who are trying to apply the technology to grow a business, grow a practice, et cetera, it wasn't the technology that gets the result, but who the person is using the technology that gets the result. And one of the things that I came to a conclusion on over time as I was, working in consulting and business expansion, et cetera, is that there's a sequence of how people evolve or emerge toward prosperity. Most people start with prosperity and try to back into their philosophy, which is exactly the opposite way. You're reversing cause and effect. It's the philosophy that is the cause, and the ultimate effect is prosperity. And there are these steps in between. Briefly, you start with a foundation of philosophy. Once that foundation is in place, which is your view of reality and your rules of evidence as to why you believe these particular premises that you might hold about reality. And then emerging from that in the third branch of philosophy, which is ethics, and ethics provides a human being with a code of values and therefore will guide your actions. So you start with your premise in philosophy, which is your metaphysics, your rules of evidence, which is a big word, epistemology, which is the theory of knowledge. And then you go to ethics, which is, again, your values, which guide your actions. What happens, emerging from ethics comes this thing called purpose. A lot of people talk about being purpose driven, how important, and I one of the products I put out there was On Purpose. It was an audio program for 20 years that we put out into the world and still are doing it now. And with On Purpose, the thing that, people say, purpose driven life, purpose, is the most important thing people can embrace, purpose, business purpose. The purpose comes up in a lot of personal development and dynamic business conversations, appropriately so. But what people don't recognize or don't ask the question, where does purpose come from? It comes from your philosophy. You can't just start with purpose. Purpose emerges from something. What gives you purpose? And that starts with philosophy. So purpose comes from philosophy. Then from there, you will have your psychological experiences because philosophy will dictate what your psychological experiences are. Just to give you an example real quick. There's a, coming up in the United States right now, there's going to be a midterm election. And roughly half of the people the morning after the election are going to feel really happy about what happened. And half the people are going to feel really mad or upset about what happened. Now, you take two human beings, one is on one side of the equation, one's on the other. They both accurately perceive what's going on. Yet they have completely opposite emotional responses. What's the difference between the two of them? Their philosophy. So philosophy is really going to dictate how you feel about things. It's your values, your philosophical premises. Once you get through that, then the next step in the equation is procedure. Procedures, again, are important for an entrepreneur. Learning better procedures will help you better manage your business, but it's not going to create a bigger business. If you are a $10 million a year business and you learn better procedures, you'll get better at managing the $10 million business, but you're not going to go to 20, 40, or 60. You're managing the effects of what your philosophy and purpose drive. The procedures manage that. Now, if your procedures are not congruent with your values, though, or with the purpose of the business, then you will have some destruction. It will prevent you from getting to that fifth level, which is prosperity. So prosperity is the ultimate effect of what philosophy starts. Not you start with prosperity in mind and back into a philosophy.
Yeah, I think that we could do podcasts on three things that you brought up in there at least. And I think it's really fascinating the way that you've woven philosophy, and you've articulated that philosophy could be at the root of our purpose and our values. Yeah. And if I were to express it maybe from a different perspective, it, you know, we've heard a lot about this notion that, you know, people think that if I have these things, if I have these things in my life, then I can do these amazing things in my community and I can be this catalyst for change. But really, we know, and there's a lot of subject, in a lot of dialogue around, no, that's backwards. It's not have, do, be. It's actually be, do, have. And at the root of what you're saying is being this thing, being the change you want to see in the world. For example, in the heart of that is our philosophy.
You know, you just impressed me like maybe no other human being I've ever explained this to, because you picked that up that quickly. Literally, when I teach those five P's, starting with philosophy and ending in prosperity, the last comment I make on it is that it's be, do, have. And if you turn that thing upside down, you're doing have, do, be. And that's reversing cause and effect. You have it 1,000% right. And you're right, your philosophy is who you're being. It starts with the being. And the interesting and important thing is that you can change it, you can modify it. You might have been, you know, when I say you, not you necessarily, but anybody who's listening to this could have been in the backseat of a car and listening to their parents talk, and they might have said something like, as they were driving by a neighbor's house that was a big house, rich people are thieves. Well, you just adopted a philosophical premise unwittingly. And as in your life, when you're trying to enrich yourself, you still have this premise that you even know you hold, that rich people are thieves, or don't bite off more you can chew, don't bite, try to be something you're not. Any type of premises that are thrown out there kind of haphazardly by your mothers, fathers, teachers, preachers, they're in there somewhere. And many times they're driving our behaviors and outcomes, and we don't even know they're there. So that's why if we go back to objectify our philosophy and to know what our premises are and make sure we live a life in alignment with those premises, the impact is absolutely transformational.
Yeah, no, and I can really start to see this. Now, explain to me from your perspective what the difference is between philosophy and perspective, because I think that people listening will say, well, no, that's just the way you're looking at it. That's a perspective, and perspective is truth, and we've heard those kinds of things. But there's a subtlety in what you're saying that makes those things very different. You're not saying philosophy and perspective are the same thing at all.
Basically, your philosophy is going to give you your perspective if we look at perspective as context. You know, like we have a certain here's what philosophy gives you. It gives you a sense of life, right? It gives you a sense of reality and what it means to be a human being alive on planet Earth. So in a sense, it can give you perspective. But I believe that when people use the term perspective, you know, they are typically, it's a narrower scope of reference as compared to having a fully developed philosophical system. And this is the thing about philosophy. There is a structure to philosophy, and this structure can be learned and utilized as a tool. And that's my point. Philosophy is a tool for achievement. I use it as a tool to help me succeed in what I want to get, you know, done in my life, as compared to where perspective might be a little bit, you know, a little bit fuzzier and maybe less of a well-developed system of thinking, if you will.
Yeah. So if we, again, I think the critical thing that people need to do when they're listening to the word philosophy is we're really not talking about Socrates sitting at the Parthenon gazing at the stars. We're not talking about academic thought. We're talking about action. We're, you know, philosophy in the way that you've defined it and you've articulated it in this way is a very active word. It's not theoretical. It's not ethereal.
Well, it can be, but I guess the point I'm making is that, in other words, you know, yes, you know, I've read, you know, Plato and Aristotle and those, you know, those big wide books that get into, you know, abstractions about the general nature of existence. But what I'm talking about here is the practical application of this thing called philosophy. How you can literally take the branches and say, you don't have to be thinking about, you know, the grand nature of everything and have the debates, you know, between Aristotle and Plato and, you know, what, you know, the Platonic view of metaphysics versus the Aristotelian view and all that kind of stuff. We can literally say that an entrepreneur who's got no training in philosophy, a stay-at-home mom, you know, who has a, you know, an entire world to manage, you know, and has her own experiences, et cetera, all these people can utilize philosophy as, I think, the most powerful personal development tool and success tool that's available to human beings. And it's the one that I think everybody misses.
So one of my the greatest influences in my life is a man by the name of Warren Rustan. And Warren talks about when you change the way you look at the world you look at changes. And that is the difference between philosophy, a difference in philosophy versus a difference in perspective. The way you look at something is philosophy. What you're looking at is perspective. And what I wonder at the heart of this, and it literally has me physically excited about this notion, is this where people talk about resilience. And we were talking about resilience before actually beginning the interview portion of our call. Is philosophy the root of where resilience comes from entrepreneurs and leaders?
There's no doubt about it. You know, what happens, philosophy is your compass, right? So it gives you direction. I think a lot of the personal development people had it wrong when they start to describe human experience as a pain pleasure, being pain pleasure driven. And that comes from the turn of the last century psychologists, the behaviorists, where they said that human beings live in the seeking of pleasure and the avoidance of pain. So what happened is the self, help movement, or the personal development movement, started to basically adopt that and say, any behavior you have, I can describe it in terms of either you were seeking seeking pleasure or avoiding pain. However, I always felt that even though there's logic to that, it was dehumanizing in a sense. There had to be more to it. And the reality is, in life, there's always going to be pain. There's always going to be pleasure. They're going to come and go on an alternating basis. The constant in your life, if you have it, is purpose. What makes a human being different than every other form of animal on the planet is the fact that we can choose a purpose for our lives. A dog cannot choose a purpose for its life. If it could, it probably would not live with you. A cow, could not choose a purpose for its life. If it could, there'd be no such thing as McDonald's, right? So bottom line is that we have a neocortex. We can think in abstract terms. We can contemplate our lives, our future, our past, our ancestors, etc. That from that unique ability for this abstract conceptualization, we can form our philosophy, our views of reality. We can support it with evidence that we can dictate what our evidence is. And then we can create from that a purpose that says, now this is why I live. And when you have a purpose, you will go through pain. You will go through pleasure. The constant companion in the life is the purpose. And that's where your perseverance comes from. If you're in pain pleasure mode, then you're constantly changing directions and positions all the time just to avoid pain, as compared to when you have a purpose, you'll go through the pain to get to the other side because of what's driving you. And again, that purpose comes out of your philosophy.
And I'm going to submit quite a different shift to that actually the pain doesn't even exist. Mm-hmm. Because we don't perceive the pain. It doesn't exist because it's simply a necessary step along the path to get to our purpose. And, you have that the cast of Abraham Lincoln behind you.
Yeah.
And it's a perfect segue. I think that when he was failing, when he had setback after setback after setback, it's likely true that no elected official anyway, no prominent leader had as many prominent failures ever throughout their lives as Abraham Lincoln. But there's also likely few that have been more impactful. And I believe that he never perceived any of those setbacks as failures or as absolute.
Yeah. It's all – and that's kind of a context thing, right? You fail forward, in a sense, and, you learn life's lessons, and it's kind of the Nietzsche thing, that which does not kill me just makes me stronger. I got that. I share your sentiments about Lincoln, which is why I have this live mask of him on my desk, which I picked up at a Christie's auction. It's a pretty cool thing that I just sometimes sit and stare at. The reality is that he had a very strong and clear purpose, and there was no amount of failure that was going to prevent him from continuing, to move toward it until he achieved. And he had many disasters, many setbacks, but he is, the poster child for perseverance. And I think, as entrepreneurs, every entrepreneur, I mean, why aren't more people successful entrepreneurs? Because it's so hard. There are so many heartaches and setbacks and challenges and risks and all these things that we go to. And this is where, again, we go with philosophy as a tool and purpose that comes from it. That's what gives people the strength. You know, it's not so much that, you know, people have a lack of skill when they fail. It's usually errors in their thinking. They go enthusiastically in the wrong directions. It's not that they weren't good managers, they weren't good, you know, CEOs or COOs, or they didn't have the basic skill sets. They didn't, you know, they didn't know how to read, you know, an income statement or a balance sheet or any of that kind of stuff. That's not why they fail. They fail because they had an error in thinking. And the error in thinking comes, you know, again, that can be corrected through philosophy and through a process of philosophical pursuit.
And even when people are high functioning from a philosophical point of view, it's one of those things. I think it's I don't want to liken it to the negative connotations of it being a monster, that it, but as it grows, it requires more nurturing, more fuel in order to maintain that growth of philosophy. Think about Abraham Lincoln, again, as a great example. He nurtured his philosophical core deliberately, intentionally. It was not something that happened by accident, and it's not something that he maintained by accident through great adversity. You know, the American Civil War, he moved away from the comfortable confines of the White House to the cottage that was right in the war zone, and right, walked the fields to nurture his philosophy.
Yeah, and that's what, you know, kind of how you forge your soul, right? You know, one of the in our accountability group, one of the quotes that we really had embraced and discussed for a couple of weeks was I think it's Oliver Wendell Holmes, where he said, I wouldn't give a fig for simplicity on this side of complexity, but I'd give my right arm for simplicity on the far side of complexity. And what do you mean by that? Because you said as this thing grows and gets bigger, it might become more complicated to try to hold up and to manage, you know, with this thing called your philosophy. But there is a complexity arc that you get over, that once you get to the other side, and this is where mastery is, you get to far side simplicity. The example I give on this is near side simplicity is 2 + 2 = 4. Far side simplicity is E = mc². They're both extremely simple equations, but the walk that Einstein had to take through this complexity arc to go through all of his thinking and thought experiments to get to a point where he finally figured out E = mc². That is far side simplicity. And when you look at any of the great icons like a Steve Jobs or anybody, what did they do? Amazingly complex thinking and philosophy and values. But once they think all the way through that, they get to another side of it where suddenly now everything becomes extremely simplified, but it's far side simplicity across a complexity arc. And those are that's true mastery. That's when you've really got your life wired, nailed down, your business, your relationships, what have you, when you find those things that are on the far side of complexity, but they become very simple in nature.
Makes it simple but not easy, in the sense that it's simple but not easy to achieve. And I like the dialogue about the complexity arc, making it making it to the other side of that curve.
Yeah.
You know, Patrick, our time is up for today. I'd love to continue this conversation. Do you think we can do this again?
Absolutely. I'd love to. Yeah. Unfortunately, I've got all these things in my head. So 20 minutes is hard for me to let it all out. But yeah, I would love to continue this conversation.
That's great. Thanks, Patrick.
Thank you.
What a wonderful conversation. Fascinating discussion, really, about philosophy with a really successful serial entrepreneur. And when you think about his five steps, there were philosophy, ethics, purpose, procedure, and prosperity. And prosperity is the outcome when there's alignment with the foundation of philosophy, your ethics and values that guide action, then the purpose. But what gives us purpose is our philosophy. And then once you have all of this, you develop procedure. And procedures that are aligned with our philosophy, meaning we do what we believe will lead to outcomes, then prosperity is the only ultimate effect when everything else is aligned. Really fascinating conversation, and obviously just the tip of the iceberg. There's part two coming up with Patrick DiTempo, and I know you're going to enjoy that conversation as well. But I'd love to hear what you think about philosophy and philosophy as a tool to accelerate performance and achievement. Please log on to papernapkinwisdom.com and share your comments or tweet at WiseNapkin. Last but not least, you can also join in on the Facebook page. Just search Paper Napkin Wisdom. My name is Govind Jayaraman. This was Paper Napkin Wisdom. Make it a great day.